So something else that I like, I wrote down, which I regarding the movie is there's a strange detail about like Keller's dad committing suicide.
Oh yeah. And he was a prison guard.
He was a prison guard.
Oh,
and even like the news clipping even says like apparent suicide and like that his son, et cetera.
Suicide.
Right. With a handgun to the temple. There's really a lot about this. Like the more I think about it, the more I'm, earlier this morning I was like, maybe it's just something that just kind of rubs off. And then now I think by the end of the day today, I'd watch it again, or scrub through it halfway today and then read the script, where there's just so much going on where I have to feel like there's someone on the crew who's just like very pilled somewhere.
What was with the snakes?
Yeah. No, like the more you kind of like, the more you sort of like tease out the details of it, it seems like there isn't any aspect of it that's like not like, like pilled on.
To some extent. Yeah.
The pedophilia stuff that was cut really like just like sealed the deal for me.
Right. No, like, cause when I got here, Tanner and I told me about the pedophilia stuff and I felt the same way. I was like, I don't know. We're going to be reaching for most of this. Uh-huh. And then you said they cut a pedophile version. And I was like, boom, game on. Let's fucking go.
I like the idea that like what they cut was just turns out that like Terrence Howard was a pedophile.
Like he starts playing Gary Glitter on the trumpet.
It has nothing to do with like the like broader conspiracy. It's just like a little side plot where like Terrence pedophile is like, kidnap some other neighbor.
I love that they just gave him a soy neighbor.
he is just like a soy neighbor.
The Terrence Howard subplot where like Hugh Jackman just forces this like poor fucking marching band instructor to abuse like a mentally disabled man is just like so insane. One of the aspects that is not like overtly pilled but that I appreciated about Prisoners was that like, I guess you could like make an argument that this movie's kind of like pro cop, except for the fact that like Jake Gyllenhaal like obviously like hates having to like interact with the victims.
The
of
brass,
crimes,
yeah. Uh-huh.
And like does not enjoy, like he's like not sympathetic to Hugh Jackman or his wife. There's like a great scene where he's been talking to them. He's like trying to comfort Hugh Jackman's wife. She's like all fucked up on like Vyvanse, so it's just like impossible to like talk to like get through to her. He's like sitting in his car like checking his like text messages, and Hugh Jackman comes out of the house, and Jake Gyllenhaal sees him and just goes like and like rolls the window down and just like, hey, how's it going?
what's funny is like how the scene opens too in the house is when she asks him like, did we pass the polygraph? And like he's like, what? Because he's on his phone like texting. He's at the home of this couple who like just had their daughter kidnapped. He's just like texting, ignoring her when she's asking if we passed the polygraph test.
He's like tweeting some dumb guy
back,
shit.
Like the waitress from the Chinese restaurant the night before. Right. Really sorry, that's never happened to me before. Like, again.
It's like, what? But did you fry that shit in seed oils? I think that's why I couldn't get it up.
In the script, their like flirtation is like so much more egregious.
Really?
Yeah. Well, just like on her part, it's just like he's just like not paying attention. It's like she obviously wants him. And
That's so funny.
Why? This guy's eating alone on Thanksgiving.
And he's twitchy and blinky too. Kind of weird. Which I imagine that was his choice.
Yeah, that's what I gather. But it's funny.
If he's allowed to paint his fucking knuckles, then.
Right. Of all the stretches that I am going to make in like making connections between Prisoners and Program to Kill, I watched an interview with Arthur Shawcross, who was the guy who killed a bunch of kids
in Rochester.
Yes. 10-year-old, 12-year-old raped and killed them, got let out, and then was like killing prostitutes. I watched an interview with him and I swear to God, he does the exact same twitch.
Oh, really?
Like, it is the exact
weird with the blinky shit.
There's only a full like number of ways that you can do a twitch, I suppose. But I watched that and I was like, boom, that's Jake Gyllenhaal.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I bet he read this book to prep.
No, I bet Arthur Shawcross watched Prisoners and he's like, I'm going to try this out.
He's like, damn, that's crazy. I'm a prisoner. Yeah. It's kind of a circle in that way. Okay. So I brought this up earlier and you guys kind of steamrolled me. What's with the fucking snakes? So the guy who looks like the dumb cousin from Succession, who's like accused or like, no, he's
play acting. He's play acting. Bob Taylor.
Yeah. What's up with that?
With the snakes.
And specifically the big like plastic bins of snakes too.
I don't know. I couldn't I don't know what to gather from that other than maybe just like further religious symbolism just baked into the movie.
No, I guess that
counts. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's like, if you like stare like way too hard at like the drawings of the mazes on the wall and that guy and like the fucking McMansion that guy wrote, it seems like I feel like there's supposed to be some sort of like a visual comparison between like the mazes that this guy was basically like driven insane having to solve and like the way that like snakes look when they like undulate around one another. I don't know if I can like go any deeper into that.
So like they were just asked and answered. There we go.
Like they were perhaps like just going for a strictly visual motif, you're saying?
Yeah, because like in like the mazes that he draws on like the walls of like the house, they sort of like segue into more sort of like organic snake-like shapes at points.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's also like the whole thing. This is like a real leap, but like there's like the whole phenomenon of like snake handling and like Pentecostal religions, which, you know, also has a sort of like weird kind of like cultic and like hallucinatory like aspects.
Well, yeah, there is a comment.
Like
I said,
that's like much more of a leap.
There is a comment, though, earlier on about Alex Jones being afraid of snakes because of an incident when he was younger. And it is not clear like what the like religious identity is of like Holly Jones and her husband, but like
probably some
snake incident happened like with them. You know, since he was abducted at such a young age.
He was on this plane. So and there were snakes.
Yeah. Right, yes.
I'm sorry.
So yeah, that's all I could really gather from from that. It is very funny that he doesn't like close the lid and just lets the snakes sort of run out.
I was like, buddy, what are you doing? There's snakes everywhere.
Right, are you a snake expert? Do you know that these aren't poisonous? And he's just like still going.
Venomous.
Yeah. Poisonous?
Venomous.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
If it's if they bite you and you die, they're venomous. If you bite them and you die, they're venomous. They're poisonous.
Gotcha.
If they bite you and they die, you're poisonous.
You're poisonous. Gotcha. Right. Thanks for clearing that up.
Little Cloud Theater tip out there for all the little Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
Also, don't go camping one-on-one with a Scout Master.
Who was an Eagle Scout in Program to Kill? Somebody.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, I don't know.
Walt Whitman. Charles Whitman.
You had me fucked up there for a minute. I was like, boy, I missed that chapter. Of course, he was a pedophile.
Yeah. Well, I'm just... Wait, really?
Walt Whitman? Yeah, he was a little boy fucker.
Oh.
Or at least... Well, no, because and then he mentions Lewis Carroll as well in the beginning of the book.
Yes, that's like one of the longest footnotes in the book being like Lewis Carroll.
Yeah, that was another one where I was like, hell yeah, buddy, give me the juice.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Sketching little girls, nasty.
Yeah, but so there's something that like we talked about this a little briefly on Mother Base the other night, but like perhaps more in the context of Program to Kill and specifically like around the time that this came out. Around the time Prisoners came out, I think one of the most valuable things that like cinema has to offer is being able to like, you know, think of it as a mirror and sort of analyzing like what is happening in the culture at the time that something like this comes out. And like I mentioned at the beginning, is like Prisoners is certainly like not the only film like at this time like touching on these like subjects. Certainly there's not a lot. I mean, it's a very like specific and esoteric idea, but you know, we talked about True Detective at one point, but a movie that came to mind like much later in this process, which I know you've seen it, but have you seen Kill List?
I don't think I've seen Kill List, no.
Okay, Kill List is Ben Wheatley's, I think, first movie. You're looking it up because you don't remember seeing it, do you?
No, I do. Okay. I remember it.
Well, Kill List is about two contract killers. They're like former, like essentially Blackwater, but you know, they're in the UK, so it's like whatever their version of Blackwater is. And one guy has not worked in months because of a supposed like really awful incident that happened in Kiev, which he does not talk about. But as the film progresses along, you realize something like very violent happened and he's having trouble like keeping his anger under control. His former partner like gets him like out of retirement because he needs to make money for his family, and they take this job from a shadowy figure who is aware of what happened in Kiev. Like when he signs them up, gives them the contract name, he even like they do like a blood oath that he was not expecting. He cuts his hand and they shake hands and he wasn't expecting, and he says something about Kiev, and you know, they expect it to just be very simple hits. And he starts to like, something strange is happening where the people that he is killing, they are thanking him beforehand. Like they know who he is. But they wait until the other guy is out of the room, and he's essentially being like unknowingly christened as like a new cult leader, right? They are trying to like unleash this sort of like really like hardcore, like bloodthirsty violence inside of him. And the second person they go kill, they find out about like a kiddie porn ring nearby even, right? So there's elements of that involved in it. And to the end, there's like a, even like a cult sacrifice, and he ends up being crowned like this new cult leader by accident. But like, it is a really incredible movie that like is, and he, and like even the way Ben Wheatley talks about it too, like he's clearly like deliberate in all of his like creative choices. And I think that like he knows what he's doing and what he's touching on with this movie. And this came out in 2010, 11. What does that say?
11.
Yeah. And I also, you know, I started thinking after the Detroit chapter, when I had first read it, sort of like, you know, maybe because that was, you know, a huge, that was like actually in headlines as opposed to like, you know, anything else that, that has been touched on. And, you know, I started to think about like maybe it was like happening, especially like in European movies at the time. And it seems like, you know, it's been called the new French extremity, but like really, I think new European extremity is probably the proper name for the genre. Seems very much like to be coming like outside of that. And certainly maybe not in direct response to that, but like, you know, you got to imagine that something like the Detroit case, like happening, like what that does to a society at large. And I have to like wonder if, you know, because not a whole lot has been like written about New French Extremity yet, but like I have to wonder if like maybe that's the mirror like being held up to, you know, Europe at the time in response to like just something like so like unbelievably sickening.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's, I'll leave it there.
Mm-hmm. Who could forget that movie? With Ben Crompton, correct?
Excuse me?
Who's in it?
In
what? When did we watch it?
Kill List?
Yeah.
Oh, way back. This was on Pierce.
Oh, so I was drunk then. Yeah, I don't remember shit from that. Are you kidding me?
Right. Okay. Check it out. It's very good.
It looks great. Can't wait to watch it again.
Yeah, another movie that I was, that came to mind for me that is actually like also British, which is, it's kind of funny, from 2009, so roughly the same time period. Have either of y'all seen Red Riding 1974?
No.
No.
Is that the year, or is that in the title?
It's in the title.
Okay.
It's from 2009. And I think it's like basically being remade, set in like Missouri or something, because like this movie stars Andrew Garfield and he's doing like some like mini series for FX that basically just looks like True Detective, but like not associated with like Nick Pizzolatto at all.
Mm-hmm.
Red Riding 1974 is sort of like a fictionalization of like the what was that serial killer's name? I can't remember. It's basically just like about like a young inexperienced reporter covering like a series of like murders of like young girls in this like town in like the north of England, and basically like uncovering this sort of like conspiracy by like the local sort of like gentry to kind of like maybe use like the murders as like a means of kind of like being able to like more cheaply move in on like real estate to basically kind of like gentrify the town and fill it up with like shopping malls and shit. But there are sort of like echoes throughout like the book and the movie that like it's, there's like something like maybe like a little bit more insidious than even like that happening. Like they're maybe like taking advantage of like or like covering up for some sort of like deranged serial killer and just using it to like their for their like own ends.
That was the one he did after Shaun of the Dead, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's good.
Yeah, you know.
Yes, Hot Fuzz is about like pedophile cabals, yeah.
You could make that argument, I assume.
Yeah, you.
I don't know. I don't remember how it ends besides the gun battle. I like that movie. It's fun.
Yeah. You don't remember how it ends. You like that movie.
Well, no, I mean, I don't remember why it ends. I know there's a giant shootout and everybody in the town's in on it. I don't remember to what end. Although, could be that they wanted to gentrify it and make a shopping mall.
Gotcha.
Would be my guess. I don't know. Do you remember how it ends? Or why it ends?
Shootout.
Okay, right. Okay, we've established there's a fucking shootout. What was their goal in the town?
Well, it was about making the safest village in Scotland or England.
England.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think it ends with Simon Pegg just becoming like the new chief of police, doesn't it?
Yeah. Because and the former chief of police going in jail, who is the dad of his sidekick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What's the guy's name?
And like Nick, I guess like the sort of punchline of the whole movie is like the London police come to like the little town and they're like, you know, there's anarchy in the streets. Mm-hmm. We need you to come back. And he's just like, no, I'm sorry. I'm happy. Beating up shopping carts.
Well, what else we got on the movie or book? I've gone through all of my notes.
Yeah, I'm getting towards the tail end of mine as well. We figured out why there's snakes.
Yeah, we figured that out.
We figured out why the priest who he killed, which I was unclear about. And we figured out it's not actually the actor from Succession. It's just a guy who looks like him who plays the snake guy.
you thought that.
Well, I think we all kind of thought that.
Has like the fucking like nightmare vision behind the Huddle House in a Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I guess I don't know. It's pretty like overt, but I guess like just to like not let it go like unsaid. It's like interesting that like, you know, like through the whole movie, like Hugh Jackman is like trying to figure out a way to like break Paul Dano's character, and he basically can't. And it seems like the revelation at the end of the movie is that he's just been like, you know, psychologically tortured his entire life, that it's basically like impossible for him to be broken anymore.
I guess that's a good point. I had not considered that.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I like to take the extra leap and say that, like, you know, it is of the, you know, to go along with our more pilled theory that, you know, he was programmed to kidnap them and just doesn't remember it. You know, there's something very interesting that is like said like very quickly, like when Bob Taylor kills himself, when he's trying to like, he's telling him to like, tell us where you hid the bodies, and he just keeps saying like, I can't, over and over again, as if like, you know, I mean, granted, Bob Taylor, like, he knows where he hid the fake bodies, but you know,
like
if I'm going to
like say, like tell them, like, because he's been like psychologically manipulated where he can't say it,
and so like his reaction is to shoot himself in the head like immediately after. It's funny how different like that scene is written too. Like if I recall, like him, like not being able to say what it is taken out, and instead is like Detective Loki just like beating the shit out of him, and just like an excessive degree of police brutality. Like I think he like busts his nose, which I guess he kind of roughs him up in the movie too. But
right, yeah. not to that extent though.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
one other.
No, go ahead.
No, sorry, guys. I was just going to say that I had, like, I feel like I had one more thought, but I can't remember what it was.
I think just if we were to put a bow on things, not that we necessarily have to, plenty more book reports I can talk about, but the idea of, you know, a conclusion or a neat end. And I find myself always wanting that, not only when I read, you know, nonfiction like this, but even watching movies, or like I am unironically the guy who sits here and is like, but why snakes? You know, like I crave explanations in a lot of ways when I experience media. And so it's been a very interesting exercise to kind of figure out, like navigate the occult stuff, or, you know, what it means to disassociate. And I think that, you know, we touched on this earlier, that the it doesn't matter, you know, at the end of the day, because the function is the same. It doesn't matter how much somebody buys into the occultist stuff versus how much of it is just pomp and circumstance. And I guess that was useful in watching Prisoners too, is saying, okay, why snakes? Well, it doesn't matter why snakes. There are snakes, and that's a creepy thing. So how about you? What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I still am uncertain in sort of like an analysis of, you know, to put it like really, like just frankly, like how like aware this movie is and like what it's touching on. And I think that, you know, something that you had actually, Nick, mentioned way back in the Discord when we were talking about Stephen Paddock, and you had like mentioned like Oppenheimer's theory about how like, and I think like he's either he or you were being kind of tongue in cheek and saying that like, yeah, him just like just sitting and like playing slot machines for so long just turns you into like, you know, like that just sort of like messes your mind up so much by playing slot machines 12 hours a day plus.
Yeah.
Cause this was sort of like, I think this was sort of spawned on off of a discussion about the guy who shot up the subway in New York and us sort of like talking about how like you don't really need to like program people to kill anymore. Like just living in society under late capitalism is just like so just like poisonous to your brain.
Yeah, that is it is the day-to-day life is the same as being in a fucking box with Hugh Jackman.
And I think that same kind of water. Right. And I think that same kind of thing can like rub off onto movies to create this kind of thing that may or may not be like directly referencing like deep state cabals. Mm-hmm. Because whenever I take I'm like, yeah, this movie is like saying this, and then there's another thing I'm like, well, maybe it's not, and I end up back in the same place. Like this movie is just very much just, you know, a lot of stuff that is just rubbing off on it, and nothing's necessarily overt. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah. Good pick.
Yeah, totally. Well, yeah, that conversation on the Discord was also like interesting, because I feel like that was sort of like one instance of like a argument that I see a lot like on like Twitter and other like social media platforms, where like I was like talking to like another person on this Discord channel who sort of like I was talking about like the whole like PTK aspect of like a lot of like, you know, violent spectacle events in like American society. And I feel like there's been this like kind of line drawn by like people, by some people on the left, who are basically just like, oh, you're overemphasizing like how successful like MK Ultra was, or is it like giving like too much like power to like the CIA or something like that. And you know, capitalism is like inherently like alienating, and like would just like naturally like creates you know, the conditions for like people to become like serial killers or mass shooters or something like that. And I'm kind of like my position is basically like, yeah, that's true, but like the aspect of that argument, which is like capitalism is like inherently like alienating and atomizing to like the people that exist within it. But if you were like a entity that hoped to exert like a significant portion of control over the people that exist within capitalism, would you not try to like create an artificial means to like accelerate like those alienating aspects of capitalism to your own ends?
Mm-hmm. Also, I can't imagine decoupling either of those things.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you're in an agency who, you know, you were in middle management in Langley somewhere, and you got to justify your paycheck every year. You got to come up with projects anyway.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like a movie that I always thought would be kind of funny to make would be to make sort of like a good period of Adam McKay's career, like screwball comedy starring like Will Ferrell, just sort of about like the deep state. That's just sort of about like two like bumbling guys that sort of like end up like, you know, like initially they're like, you know, the like lower end of the spectrum, like SS officers. And then they just sort of like apropos of nothing, nothing of like their own doing, get like paperclipped to America and get put in charge of like an aspect of MK Ultra, and are just sort of like a couple of like dumbasses keep getting like given these like bigger and bigger jobs within like the deep state. And then like the denouement of the film would be like they're put in charge of like a Jim Jones style cult. And like the movie ends with like another CIA kill team just being like, guys, you gotta cut this out, we're gonna have to kill everybody here. Sorry, it's nothing personal.
I like that. That's a good idea.
I'm trying to like imagine like Adam McKay making that now and putting his like hardcore like liberal propaganda into it, like what that would be. Like he would try and like justify it in some way. Mm-hmm. You know, he's making a J6 movie.
Mm.
Nick's putting his hands over his face.
We're going to be at the midnight screening of that son of a bitch.
We will have an episode.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. And, God, can I come back for that one?
Yes. Of course. No, yeah. You know, the worst thing about that is, so I was kind of mixed on, did we watch it together? The QAnon HBO doc?
Yeah, we started it.
I was kind of like mixed on it, but overall I thought it was like pretty good.
Yeah.
But Colin Hoback, who directed that, is co-writing this J6 movie, which makes me want to like reconsider like that entire project.
Yeah, I mean,
okay, well, so how about this? Maybe the redeeming aspect of the the Adam McKay J6 movie is that they use like CGI and like motion capture to put Leonardo DiCaprio's head onto Frederick Brennan's body.
I am very amped for it. It's like, because I think that like Don't Look Up probably upset me more than any movie that I've watched in like years.
Mm-hmm.
The Bubble I watched recently, that was actually like right on par with it. The new, which is very funny, like how similar those two guys' careers have been. Judd Apatow, his new movie, The Bubble, like the way that they have like gone from like,
oh God,
you know, having like parallel careers in like goofball comedy.
Well, they just both now face fuck this semi irony into genuineness, into like our consciousness that we're just stuck with.
I think another director that was sort of like on that same wavelength is, but sort of like took it in like a better direction, is Todd Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's like an interesting parallel between Adam McKay's last like Will Ferrell movie, which was The Other Guys, and Todd Phillips's last like conventional like comedy, which was War Dogs, because both of those films sort of felt like the directors sort of trying to do the most with the formula they'd already established as directors, but like with sort of like a new sense of like social significance and like the role of a director kind of like involved in like making it.
Yeah.
And like Adam McKay's experience doing The Other Guys was just like, oh no, I just have to, you know, make like basically like make a whole movie that's a PowerPoint presentation about the 2008 financial collapse. And Todd Phillips's experiences making War Dogs was just like, oh no, I need to make a movie that people will be afraid of seeing because they'll be killed by incels. Like all of this.
Yeah, it is true. Right.
I respect that method a lot more.
Absolutely. I had something I totally forgot. Oh, you mentioned you're really into you wanted to come for what's the fucking Gallo movie where he's what's the fucking
Freeway 2?
Freeway 2.
Freeway 2. Hell yeah. Okay. All right.
I want to get a little taste of what you think about Freeway 2.
We'll tease out a little bit. We'll do this again.
Because I'm really drawn to your idea on Evil Within more than anything. Mm-hmm. But anyways.
Oh, yeah. I would love to do Evil Within. I don't know. I don't really. It's been like long enough since I've seen Freeway 2 that I don't have a lot to say about. But it's besides the fact that like it's probably one of Gallo's best performances. And just like, I don't know. I guess like the only reason why he agreed to do it was because he got to show his massive hog again.
Yeah. It's a really like sickening movie also. Like the one girl she runs away with is just like really into like blood orgies. And
it,
like,
it has like Oshima levels of gratuitous underage nudity.
Right.
It's just, it's pretty gross, honestly. Like all these little girls are making out in jail. Like, come on. And you don't even get Gallo to the last like half hour anyway.
Right.
But I mean, do you seen the first one?
I guess like, no, I haven't.
The first one I think is great. It's another good Kiefer Sutherland willing to be the heel of all heels in movies.
He's a pedophile.
He plays the pedophile. He's the big bad wolf.
Well, he's a pedophile murderer picking up hitchhikers.
Yeah, yes. That's true. Uh-huh.
Y'all know that the guy who wrote and directed the Freeway movies made Forbidden Zone, right?
No, what is Forbidden Zone?
I don't think I know that movie.
Well, he wrote Forbidden Zone. Forbidden Zone was a movie. It was actually directed by Danny Elfman's brother. What is his name? Like Jerry Elfman or something like that. It's like,
oh fuck. Okay, look at this.
Let me see if I can find like, the trailer for it.
Richard Elfman. Okay.
Dick Elfman.
Yeah, Richard Elfman. Dick Elfman. I'm not, doesn't look like there's any
clips cool.
on YouTube that have the amount of blackface that
oh,
in
sure.
those scenes that you need to get a really good sense of this movie, but it's definitely worth checking out.
Originally shot on black and white film, Forbidden Zone is based upon the stage performance
Spinell, of sold.
The Los Angeles theater troupe, the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo, which I like, of which Elfman, Bright, and many of the cast and crew were a part, and revolves around an alternate universe accessed through a door in the house of the Hercules family. Okay, I'm on board. Film begins in Venice, California. Wait, Huckleberry P. Jones,
-$100,000.
Oh wow! So I guess it lost $100,000. Wow, that's pretty good. Yeah. All right. Sign me up for that.
I'm dropping a link to the to some really low res trailer into the movie.
Yeah, we'll boot that up as soon as we get off.
Awesome. That's great. Here, I'm gonna play this now.
It looks like this guy did a. He wrote a. The same guy who wrote Freeway wrote a Ted Bundy movie. That's interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. Oh, yeah. He also wrote this other insane movie called Tiptoes, which stars Gary Oldman as a little person who is brothers with Matthew McConaughey, who is the only person of like average height in his family.
Uh-huh. Wow.
How do they do the little person thing?
Yeah.
Well, did they do the knee trick? Where you just kind of walk around on your knees and put your shoes on your knees.
Let me drop the trailer for that too. So. Yeah, this one's. But while I'm copy and pasting this stuff, I wanted to ask y'all if you wanted to kind of like, I don't know, how do you think of the Paul Dano performance in Prisoners juxtaposed with his performance in The Batman?
Because
I feel like there's sort of like a conceptual relationship between the two. Mostly because I think by now we've kind of established a lot of relations between Prisoners and Program to Kill. And Jimmy Fallon Gong has a sort of running thread of episodes on his podcast where he compares and contrasts Program to Kill with Mindhunter, which is the more sort of like
I was going to bring that up, yeah.
Approach to serial killers. And according to like Wikipedia, Mindhunter was like one of the books that Matt Reeves read in doing research for writing The Batman.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it tracks. I mean, first of all, I'm so glad you asked this question because Tanner hates talking about performances and movies. I don't know why. To me, it's like that's what a movie is. Kind of a pain in the ass that way, this kid.
Yeah.
But I mean, I remember thinking that a lot.
That one,
yeah, I'll field this ball.
We recorded a Batman episode, and
he wouldn't let us put it out.
We
because,
did a Batman and Ambulance
because
episode.
We were talking about performance. I was talking about performances too much, and he fucking freaked out. He's like, "We're not doing it." He's yelling. Basically. But I think like there. I remember reading there were some memes after the Batman was released that like. He was the most like shaken to his core and in like researching this role than he was for any of the movies, any of the roles he played, including his role in, I think it was 12 Years a Slave.
Dano?
Yeah. Paul Dano. Yeah. Where he played like a violent slave owner. And apparently he wasn't as shaken when he studied up on that one as when he played the fucking goofy Riddler trying to kill Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez at Madison Square Garden, Gotham Square Garden. But, I guess maybe he brought it a little more because he had to wear the mask in half of his part, but I kind of thought it was like he kind of didn't acted like the same guy. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, they definitely sort of seem like very similar performances. Like I kind of almost assumed that the reason why Dana was cast in that role was because of Prisoners, because it sort of seems like.
Oh, sure. I could see that.
Like what else could have, what else would have like brought them to mind, like to do this character?
Matt Reeves saw Little Miss Sunshine. He was like, hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking the Riddler loves Nietzsche.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of like, I wasn't like super into like the Batman movie. It was very long. I did not really care about anything that happened with Catwoman, but maybe that's more of maybe that like says more about me than it does the movie.
You're sexist, right?
Mm-hmm. But
Loud and clear, buddy.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it got... It does. I feel like the Riddler, like this sort of like portrayal of like the Riddler's biography in the movie does kind of like, it goes to the extent of like the serial killer like theory that like is reported in like Mindhunter, which is basically just like, you know, like came from like an unstable like family background.
Yeah.
All this stuff. It feels like, I guess like I was disappointed that it didn't go like the one step further to like.
Right. Right.
Like actually to like bring it into like PTK territory. I guess like the two most redeeming aspects of like the latest Batman movies is one that they're pretty like explicit that like Batman doesn't actually care about what happens to Gotham City for most of the movie. He's just sort of like working out his own like Freudian shit.
Yeah.
And that's
definitely
all that really like matters to him until the very end. And two, that his presence in Gotham City is actually a net negative for the city because he's just enabling all of these insane people to like
justifying it,
come out of the woodwork and like, yeah, try to shoot AOC. I don't know, send newspapers, really convoluted crossword puzzles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead.
All right.
Yeah, I'll go. We talked about this a little bit in the unreleased tape where, I assume if enough people bug Tanner about it, then they'll let us drop it. But, right. I think it was refreshing at first and I liked it in the beginning because, it feels like whenever they make a Batman movie or a superhero movie in general, it has to be a comment on the environment in which it was released and the time and the politics of the era. And if you watch Marvel movies, then you're like, okay, well, they completely fucked up trying to interpret the moment, as it were, because it's the people who make these movies are psychopaths and whatever. But like, so you sit down and you watch the Batman and you're like, hell yeah, gritty, like city environment. Like I love seeing shots of the L tracks in Chicago. Like it's not trying to comment on anything or like be an incel diatribe. Cool. I just want to see cool Batman movie. And then, yeah, you get the shit where like Robert Pattinson's just kind of like is subject to the world around him and is trying to like, to kind of grapple with that. But then eventually when it introduces the Paul Dano Riddler character and I think they're just so worried about taking that next step and actually identifying what a person in that position would be mad at that you're sitting there forced to be like, oh, so he's this fucking crazy about like corrupt tax codes. Like it's the fucking comptroller got elected his buddy to write the fucking water bill. And that's what he's going to blow up the city for. Like I don't buy it. You know,
right. There's that next door to some like really like far-fetched pathology about,
yeah,
you know, growing up in that boy's home and having it out for Wayne.
Right. Yeah.
Does he know that that's Wayne? You know, for a moment, you're like, oh, this makes sense. He knows it's Wayne. Then you're like, oh, it doesn't know it's Wayne.
Right. So it's like because they don't want to go the incel route. And, you know, all right. Thank God they didn't, I guess, because, yeah, we've heard that to death at this point. But it's like, OK, well, what are we doing here? You know, at least as I see it.
Yeah, now that I think about it, a more like appealing route for them to have taken would have been if they'd gone like the route of like Ted Kaczynski, where it's like, you know, like half of the people that Ted Kaczynski sent like mail bombs to, it was like, you know,
local guy.
I think he sent one to like the Stanford like a computer lab or something like that.
Yeah.
Or like the guy that was like the president of like an airline company.
Yeah.
But then he also United just Airlines. Sent like mail bombs to like people that owned like computer stores or something like that. Yeah. Just, like, you know, like blew up guys that just like wanted to help you make your gaming rig or something like that. And I feel like if he had been like a little bit more or like less focused with like who his targets were, that would have maybe been like a, you know, like a little bit more realistic.
Yeah.
Rather than like killing like, you know, people who are corrupt in these like very kind of like, you know, city politics kind of ways. If he had just been like, oh, he killed like the corrupt chief of police and the mayor and then I don't know, like a bunch of pet stores that sell bats got blown up.
Right.
I don't really know what to
do. Right. Because I walk out of that movie being like completely on the Riddler's side. It's like, oh, yeah, he's taking out all these marks. Yeah. And
these annoying people I've had to watch for 3 hours. Now they get to die. Hell right. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah. His worst part about him is he makes these like horrible internet videos.
Yeah.
Aside from that.
Well, you're allowed to post cringe from time to time, but.
Yeah. There is that funny comment in the movie where it's like, he has 500 followers.
Right.
It's like, damn, look out for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look out.
Got He's got to start a meme page. That's kind of the secret.
Right.
But,
But so real quick, Mindhunter was that's like the FBI profiling book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. OK, because I've seen the show and the show really, really loves the FBI. Like, it's like really, really excited by it. Mm-hmm. And like the show, I think, is good. I mean, I watched the first season and it's enjoyable, but like you reprogram to kill and you want to like shoot David Fincher in the head for like making Mindhunter, you know. It is kind of curious. I do wonder what Matt Reeves was pulling from for the Batman and reading Mindhunter. But yeah, it's like, I guess there's some kind of like template for the Riddler. If it is, like, it's lost on me.
Well, so there was like a deleted scene where Batman, the most, I guess, like explicit example is in this deleted scene, Batman goes to talk to the Joker, who just looks like dog shit in this movie.
Yeah.
He's played by like the annoying short kid from The Green Knight. He goes there specifically to like make a profile of the it's basically like the scene from Manhunter where Will Graham goes to visit Hannibal Lecter to like get the scent back on his back in his nose about how to like deal with crazy people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like sort of like the most like overt kind of like idea that you can get of like how it affected like the movie, except like, I don't know, I'm trying to remember all the steps that he got to figuring out who like the Riddler was, but he basically just kind of like trips over his dick for most of the movie.
Yeah.
And then just like by happenstance is just like, oh, there's a light on in that window up there.
Yeah.
Outside of the nightclub where all of the people that have been murdered hang out.
Yeah. I mean, he literally wants to be found because he thinks, you know, Batman's going to join him on his little goofy spree because he, you know, sits there in the diner. Which is a stupid thing to think that would happen. I mean, he's Batman.
You got anything else?
No, I don't think so. Ted Kaczynski, he volunteered for LSD trials in college. He was a subject in experiments with acid.
Yes.
Just toss that out there.
Yep.
Yeah. Another dog shit.
And local Chicago movie. Gay.
I don't know if you watched the Ted K movie. It's dog shit.
Oh, wait.
With Charlito Copley. Just came out.
Oh, fuck. I don't know who that is.
I was posting clips on our page.
Oh, shit. No, I remember I watched one a few years ago with my dad. Because that's the other thing. My dad, all he does is watch movies. He doesn't sleep. But it was something. Whoa. There was some kind of dramatized version. Oh, no. It was the guy who played. Okay. So in Road Trip, right? There's the nerdy guy who has sex with that big black woman. Remember him?
DJ Qualls.
Yeah, he plays Ted Kaczynski in this, I think it's like a Showtime version. I think that's him. It's either him or fucking Topher Grace. I don't fucking know. I'm not good with names of actors. But that's all I got. Do you want to plug anything?
Watch Mother Based.
Every there Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, every Sunday. Yeah, I think our next episode is going to be about Brock Pierce, so that should be fun.
Hell yeah.
Right.
This will probably be released the same day, that morning. So if you have to pick one, watch Mother Base live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I try to do, so we usually record Sunday and I usually pop in afterwards. So Mother Base has been my weekend wind down. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that winds you down. It does. Instead of just makes you really fucking mad about something for no reason.